The NFL schedule is out. Let's analyze every minute of the upcoming season before it even happens. That's the way it works in the NFL. It's amazing. It's amazing the marketing job the NFL has done over the years. We're going to talk about the schedule, some very interesting ramifications of the schedule. We'll also get John's memories of Jerry Burns. Jerry passed since the last time we've done this show, and I'm sure he has as many fond memories of Jerry as I do, both as a fan and as a journalist. And let's get into just what this team looks like these days. This is the Viking Update Show, part of TalkNorth.com. Follow us on Twitter at TalkNorthPod. Subscribe to your favorite podcast app. It's free. It's the best way to listen to this show and to the network. And once again, thanks to our producer, Brandon Morton. All right, the NFL schedule is out, and while I admit it, I split the difference here. On the one hand, I make fun of the NFL for making such a big deal out of their stupid schedule release. And then I go ahead and overanalyze the schedule in May because I'm a geek like all the people they cater to, you know? So I look at the schedule as it comes out and I go, that doesn't look like it's very easy. They got to play, you know, the tougher, maybe the best division in the AFC, maybe the toughest division in the NFC. We have tough road games. They have to play some bad weather games. And if they end up, you know, if the Packers are starting Jordan Love and if the Bears are starting Justin Fields, they might have to play those quarterbacks after they've started figuring it out. So I don't think it's the most favorable schedule for this group.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Now, the caveat is that there's always teams that rise and fall quickly in the NFL, right? So, I mean, I might look at the Browns October 3rd and I think, oh boy, you know, that's a team on the rise that they looked really good. I am really high on them, but maybe they take a step back. Maybe it does not happen for them this year and they end up looking really, really bad. And that looks like an easier game. You know, same thing, maybe the Lions, maybe Dan Campbell biting kneecaps, you know, and all that other stuff works in the first year.
What can go wrong?
Yeah, right. And they're tough and they're stingy. I don't know about all that stuff, but in general, I would say if I'm trying to get a handle on it, it doesn't look great. I mean, you're at the Ravens, you know, you're at the Chargers with Justin Herbert in his second year. Like, that's not going to be an easy type of a thing. You're in terms of, you know, late in the season at Green Bay, you know, you got Chicago, you know, here at home and they always come here and play hard and it's tough. It is a tough a schedule. Who knows what the 49ers are going to be like? Like there's just, given all of the questions that still surround this roster and what is going to happen and how these things are going to come together, I don't know that you can be overconfident kind of as this schedule lays out and looking like what's going to be. I think they have to come in thinking training camp is going to be incredibly important. They got to get rolling right out of the chute, Bengals and Cardinals, or else it could be a really tough, you know, start to this season.
And, you know, Jeff Diamond always says on the Jeff Diamond show on this network, Bud Grant will always tell him, yeah, who you play matters, but when you play is just as important. And you remember the Vikings, amid high expectations, went out to San Francisco and lost to a really bad 49ers team on opening night. Mm-hmm. And that was a combination of bad circumstances. That Vikings team ended up being very good. But, if I remember right, I have to go back and look at the schedule now. But they had to play a team that didn't know it was bad yet.
That's right.
At night in a home opener. And those things are all really tough. And so I was like, you know, listen, I think the Vikings should go to Cincinnati and beat the Bengals. Of course they should. Mm-hmm. But it's probably not the best time to play the Bengals. The Bengals don't know. If the Bengals end up being bad, they won't know it for a while. They're not going to know on opening day that they're a bad team. They're going to think they're a good young team that has a chance.
Well, yeah, and the other part of it, Jim, is like I do think that the Vikings should expect to get better as the season goes on and may not be, you know, great right out of the chute either because, you know, Danielle Hunter, you know, he's going to – maybe he'll be ready to go guns blazing right from the start, but I would imagine after missing as much time as he has that it might take him a little bit of time to ramp up. So you go into and you know, Anthony Barr, like you had a lot of guys that were hurt and banged up and missed some significant time and you expect them to jump right back in. Now, one, they may be fresh and you feel good that way. But if there's some connection issues, if the offensive line, that new look offensive line isn't hitting on all cylinders right away, I mean, all of a sudden, you know, the first couple of weeks of a season is when a team is kind of really searching to find itself. And so if the Vikings aren't really sharp, I mean, could I see Joe Burrow throwing a couple of touchdowns to Ja'Marr Chase? Like, yeah, of course. Like, that absolutely could happen. And so those early season games are sometimes the ones that make me the most nervous, because mm-hmm. you're just not all the way in yet. And so, like, I'm not, you know, yes, I think that they should be able to theoretically just go in and beat the Bengals. But those ones are always the ones that are tricky. And you can say, boy, how the heck did that happen?
Yeah, and I also look at the last four games, and so often the Vikings are still playing for a lot the last 4 weeks. And at Chicago, December 20th, at Green Bay, January 2nd, both likely to be bad weather games. And the one at Chicago, a bad weather game on a shoddily kept field. Boy, those just all – and they're both night games too, so it's going to be really cold. The Vikings traditionally just don't play well in those circumstances.
They don't. And then let's even look further at it. Even their home games in December, Steelers, Rams, mm-hmm. like, you know, and then the Bears at home at the end. But like, those are heavyweight fights, man. Like, the you know, December 26th, the day after Christmas, the Rams come in and with Matthew Stafford, with you know, with that great defense that they have. And, you know, you look at that, oh, man, and that's sandwiched in between games at Chicago and at Green Bay. And then you get the Steelers and Mike Tomlin here, you know, on December 9th, like, pack a lunch, man. Like, mm-hmm. that's daunting. Maybe by that point, maybe the offense will be clicking on all cylinders and you'll feel really good. But if they're going to get into the playoffs, they're going to earn their way in with that December schedule, because that is no cakewalk, that's for sure.
And I will provide this reminder. I've said it on this show before, and Jeff Diamond always reiterates it too. A lot of the great Viking seasons, you know, great being a relative term, and talking about over the last 20, 30 years, have come when the Vikings have gotten to play a lot of bad quarterbacks. And mm-hmm. a lot of good quarterbacks. I mean, unless Aaron Rodgers leaves Green Bay, they're going to be playing a lot of good quarterbacks on this schedule.
They're going to be just like thanking their lucky stars when they get Jared Goff, like, or twice. Like, I mean, you know, like, yeah, because, you know, yeah, like, let's just assume that Rodgers is there. I mean, you got Rodgers twice. Who knows with Fields? He's pretty dynamic. I think that could be pretty good. Herbert, you know, what I mean. What
Russell
are they going to do?
Russell Wilson.
Yeah. I think I like Burrow. Kyler Murray. Baker took some big steps. I think he will be better this year under Stefanski. Again, you know, the Panthers got Darnold. I'm not high on him, but Lamar Jackson, by the way, Dak mm-hmm. Prescott, like, yes. You know, it is a murderer's row of quarterbacks they got to face for sure.
Thanks to Star Bank and Pizza Barn. We want to tell you about Star Bank. If you have you tried to call your bank lately? Do you bank locally? Star Bank is our bank at the Talk North Podcast Network. They're a family-owned local bank with branches across central and west central Minnesota. With Star Bank, you get all the bells and whistles you would expect from a bank these days, but they have no 800 number, no call center, and no confusing phone queue. You can even request your banker's cell phone number. That's how they operate. Star Bank is a true Minnesota family-run business. Check them out at starbank.net. Star Bank is a member FDIC and equal housing lender. Also want to thank Pizza Barn in Princeton. They also sponsor the John Millay Preps Show. By the way, we have great stuff across this network. Jeff Diamond, Cheryl Reeve, Michael Russo, Anthony LaPanta, Roy Smalley, Lavelle Neal. John does the John Krasinski Show on the Timberwolves as well. And we really appreciate sponsors like Pizza Barn in Princeton. Jody stays locally owned, family run business. It's not that far out of the Twin Cities. It's right near 169. Google it, GPS it, you'll be there. Great gluten-free crust, which I appreciate. John Millay always tells me that their regular crusts are incredible too. They have a cool microbrew selection, nice little patio area, beautiful redone wood interior. And again, you're supporting people who support their community. Pizza Barn, Princeton. .com. All right. So I covered Jerry Burns when I got here, and we had our good times and our bad times. In both cases, they led to great stories. What are your memories of Jerry?
Yeah, so I'm really interested to hear what you have to say, because I know like you know him and have much more direct experience. Like I spoke to Jerry, you know, as a member of the media a couple of times over the years, mostly just saying hello and introducing and just, you know, picking his brain maybe once or twice really. So I would see him at the at the games that he would show up. I'd say hello and things like that, but I did not know him. What all of my memories were as a kid watching him coach the Vikings, and when you know I was 10, 11 years old when he was doing that, and I mean obviously the obscenity filled
Yes.
post game press conferences are like hilarious, and like I heard them at the time as a kid and was just so wide eyed and thought they were the funniest thing ever. But I will say the interesting thing for me is, you know, being around my dad, kind of watching those Vikings teams and watching how my dad and like kind of grown ups kind of looked at those Vikings teams. There was always an angst with Jerry. And you know, is he getting everything? You know, all these things. But then I think like, as I grew up and as I did more research, and as you really looked back at the things that he did with Schnelker and with this offense and you know, really kind of inventing the West Coast, you know, before it was labeled the West Coast, I think I grew to appreciate his impact on the X's and O's side of things a heck of a lot more than just like, oh man, they lost to Washington in the NFC title game. Oh, you know, they couldn't quite get over the hump a couple of times with him as coach. He was an incredibly smart, incredibly gifted coach with just a, you know, a hilarious resume of post game press conference meltdowns. And so I always it was always from afar, but I really enjoyed it.
And listen, Jerry and I didn't always get along because I was a pretty tough, aggressive beat writer. It ticked him off that I would get players to pop off. In fact, it's so funny how different it was back then. Burnsy would walk up to me like, and I was standing on the sideline of practice, and he'd go, "You stirring any shit up?" And in a way that, and really not in like, I'm going to punch you in the face kind of way, more of just in a like conversational, hey, this is, you know, I know my
What
job,
do
I
I
know
got to
your
deal with?
job, and you're driving me crazy, and stop, please stop doing it. And he would, sometimes he'd come over and go, "Okay, you wrote that Ray Berry's mad at me. Is he still mad at me?" It was just so freaking casual, you know?
Oh, man.
And so, but so, you know, something for our listeners. I've started my own show on the network, Blocked and Muted with Jim Suhan. I do half opinion and then half an interview. During the Lindsey Whalen episode, I start off by telling my favorite Jerry Burns story. I won't tell it here because it's a really long story, but it basically involves me and Greg Wong, the beat writers, getting Jerry Burns drunk, hoping to get something out of him, and him blowing us off once he realized the beer is gone. That's, you know, I just gave away the punchline, but that's the story, and it's my favorite Jerry Burns story. But Jerry, the thing is, Jerry was always like that, and you know what? You didn't always like it on a daily basis, and sometimes he, you know, he really got after me. But what I loved about him was two things. Number one, he really was a genius offensively, and he really did invent an offense that Bill Walsh would later popularize as the West Coast offense. That was Jerry Burns. Throw it short, get the ball to your running backs and your tight ends, move the ball through the air instead of having to try to block everybody perfectly in a running game. Just throw a quick pass and let somebody break a tackle. You know, that all really came from Jerry. So he really was that smart. And the other side was he cussed a lot and he defended his guys and he yelled at you because he was just a regular guy. He wasn't trying to sell you toothpaste. He wasn't trying to, you know, sell season tickets. He was just being himself. And we don't always love that in the moment, but over time you really appreciate it.
Were you ever in the middle of one of those post-game meltdowns, or like, were you there for that, or was that
I wasn't
before
there
you
for
got here?
Schnelker. I got here the
Yeah.
year after the Schnelker
Okay.
meltdown. I was here for a couple of more minor ones. I would say toward the end, Jerry knew that it was over. And by the way, as Jerry has, you know, he reminded me for decades after, he didn't get fired. He did retire because I remember I would say once every 5 years, I would throw in a, oh, and after Jerry Burns was fired, and Jerry would call me up and go, hey, Jimmy boy there. Remember, I didn't get fired. I didn't get fired. All right. I retired. It was on my terms. All right. My terms. And I was like, "You're right. I'll run a correction. You're absolutely right, Jerry. That is true." But he was real, and and there were times he didn't even speak to me, but it was real stuff, and he really cared about people. And I'll also offer this reminder of the Jerry Burns tenure. He takes a team that had, you know, Mike Lynn didn't put together a anything of a worthwhile replacement player team in 87. So they end up being a wild card team, and they're really talented. They make their playoff run. Darren Nelson drops a pass at the goal line that might have sent him to the Super Bowl. And they and I think they would have won that Super Bowl. Typical Vikings luck, right? And then they win the division in 89. Then things start falling apart, and the Herschel Walker trade doesn't come off. So now the owners are replacing Lynn, so that means Burnsy's out. You know, it's like if Mike Lynn had ever walked down the hall and asked Jerry Burns, "Hey, Jerry, I'm thinking about trading everybody for Herschel Walker. Should I do that?" Burnsy would say, "Why would you trade for a running back I don't even want in my offense?"
Yeah.
Jerry, absolutely. Mike Lynn never had that conversation with Jerry Lynn. And I defend Mike Lynn on certain things, and I like covering him because he was a character and he was accessible, and I had a good relationship with him. But how can a general manager not talk to the head coach about how an offensive player would fit into his offense? It was malpractice. It backfired, and it started, you know, it basically cost this franchise about 3 years.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. Like, and it's, the other thing is like, you understand, you seem to understand how often that stuff actually does happen in professional sports. Like, it's remarkable, like, how you think, you know, let's just go back to it. David Kahn drafting Johnny Flynn. Okay.
Right.
Yes. Over Steph Curry. But like, he drafted two point guards back to back, then hired a head coach who does not use point guards in his offense. Like, what are you doing? You know, like, those are the kinds of things like happen. Like, that example right there is a perfect one of, like, it just seems so obvious. Of course, you're the general manager that's going to trade 1,000 draft picks and some players on your roster to go get Herschel Walker. I would absolutely go down to the head coach and say, "Hey, what do you think about this?" And it, maybe he thought at the time, well, of course he's going to want Herschel Walker. Maybe he thought that. I'm not sure, but like, it boggles in my mind how often you hear these stories after the fact of, well, so and so didn't talk to him about this, or they didn't communicate. Like, what do you mean? Like, that just seems to be malpractice, and it was. And usually what happens after the fact is that it all blows up, just like it did there.
Yeah, okay. And the common thread there is Lynn was more of a businessman than a football guy, and David Kahn was whatever he was. And thought he was a basketball guy. But, you know, it's I'm on thin ice here because we're sports writers and we critique people in this business all the time, but we try to do so with context and with interviews and with background and everything and research and numbers and everything else. I mean, you know, David Kahn was just winging it, and Mike Lynn built really talented teams, but he did so mostly by relying on Jerry Reichow and Frank Gilliam and his coaches and, you know, Bud Grant and everything else. This is one where he thought he was a football guy, and it just backfired completely.
Yeah. I mean, that happens. I mean, that the egos get involved, and like, especially in those cases, like maybe with Mike that time, he's probably more of a fan in that situation than anything. Like, Herschel Walker, the Heisman Trophy winner, like, the, you know, of course I want him. Why wouldn't I want him? And I've always said, like, whenever a deal seems like too good to be true, like, of why wouldn't I want Herschel Walker? That generally means you probably shouldn't want Herschel Walker. Like, the team that has him probably knows something. And I think that the Cowboys did, and they really pulled it over on Lynn, and it's too bad, because obviously that really affects and hampers Jerry Burns' legacy as well, in terms of what, you know, that team was able to accomplish because of how gutted it was by the draft picks and by, you know, by the ill-fitting piece between Walker and that. Because, yeah, I mean, Burns, like, they didn't run the I formation before Herschel got there, and that's what Herschel did.
Yeah.
You know, and so, just pretty amazing that how that kind of stuff can happen at the highest level of sports. But it happens a lot more often than people really realize.
And I'll remind people, because I think we have a lot of new listeners on the network and probably to this show, I was in a weird situation. My first pro beat was the 1989 Dallas Cowboys. So I covered the Herschel trade as Herschel left Dallas. Then I came here in 1990 and watched Herschel destroy the organization from within. And I still, you know, so Jimmy Johnson, again, this is old school sports writing days, especially around Valley Ranch. We basically walked around just bumping into the owner and the general manager and the coach whenever we wanted to. You could actually stake people out by the racquetball court. That's how loose things were. And I remember Tim Kalishaw and I were both on the beat, and Tim was kind of mentoring me in my first year. And we're like, they traded Herschel Walker for these players, you know, and nobody knew what the real deal was. And Tim had gone on TV the night of the trade in Dallas and said, I can't believe they traded Herschel Walker for a bunch of, you know, pretty good players. This doesn't make any sense. We're walking down the hallway. Jimmy comes up to us, pulls us into the copier room and goes, you idiots. I didn't trade Herschel Walker for these players. I traded Herschel Isaac Walker Holton, for all those. I said, I traded Herschel Walker for all those draft picks. Mike Lynn thinks my roster is so bad that I will get enamored of the players and keep the players and give them back the picks. What he doesn't know is I got a 10-year contract. I'm in this for the future. I'm keeping all the draft picks, and I'm going to screw them out of the players too. And we walk out of there and we go, okay, we underestimated Jimmy Johnson.
It's amazing. Yeah, and I mean – you know, he built a dynasty on that thing. You know, obviously there were other things that came into it, and there were other moves that were made.
They already had Troy. They already had Troy Aikman. They already had Michael Irvin. But you know, he built the defense. I think the picks helped him maneuver to get Emmitt Smith. And and also here's the other thing: having all those draft picks meant they could miss, and it didn't hurt them. They weren't like most teams, like going, oh, I got to nail the first and second round picks or I'm screwed. They could screw up something and still have plenty of collateral left.
And to be fair to Lynn, too, in that I'll give Jimmy Johnson the credit there in that, like, we see that sort of approach nowadays to team building, and it's really common, stockpile picks, like, you know, do whatever you can. That was not common back then. It was, you know, that was a very forward-thinking move at the time. And as you said, like, people did not process it and didn't understand it as much. But I think that Jimmy was just ahead of the game and caught someone not thinking all the way through on this, and it cost them. So, but it the wool was pulled over Mike Lynn's eyes, but in a way that it hadn't been done anywhere else before, really. So he got caught, and that's as much a credit to Jimmy as it is anything against Mike Lynn there.
And the circumstances also were that the Cowboys were terrible. Mike Lynn thought the Cowboys that, and so Mike Lynn looked at it and said, here's this guy trying to prove he's not just another dopey college coach. He's getting killed. He has a terrible roster. He's going to fall in love with my players, and I'm going to get Herschel Walker. And just, boy, every aspect of that ended up being wrong. But the psychology, Jimmy played the psychology of it perfectly.
Yep, absolutely. And the rest is history.
So next week we'll talk about Danielle Hunter, any other roster ramifications and developments that we can get into here. The good thing about the NFL is there will always be news. Thanks again to Starbank, starbank.net, and Pizza Barn in Princeton, pizzabarnprinceton.com. Thanks to our producer, Brandon Morton, and thank you for listening to TalkNorth.com.